Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System, Text Number 14. Grihashramo Jaganato.
Grihashramo Jaganato.
Brahmacharyam Hito Mama.
Brahmacharyam Hito Mama.
Vakshasthala Dvane Vastaha.
Vakshasthala Dvane Vastaha.
Sanyasa Sirasi Sthitaha.
Sanyasa Sirasi Sthitaha.
Griha Ashramaha.
Ashramaha.
Married life.
Jagannathaha.
From the loins. Brahmacharyam.
Brahmacharyam.
Celibate student life.
Celibate student life.
Hridaha.
Hridaha.
From the heart.
Mama.
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 My.
Vakshaha
stalat.
From the chest.
Vane.
Vane.
In the forest.
Vasaha.
Vasaha.
Dwelling.
Sanyasaha.
Sanyasaha.
The renounced order of life.
Shirasi.
Shirasi. In the head.
Sthitaha.
Situated.
Situated.
The married order of life appeared from the loins of my universal form, and the celibate students came from my heart. The forest-dwelling, retired order of life appeared from my chest, and the renounced order of life was situated within the head of my universal form. Purport. There are two classes of brahmachari life. The naishtiki brahmachari remains celibate throughout life, whereas the upakuravana brahmachari marries upon finishing his student life. One who remains perpetually celibate is situated within the heart of Lord Krishna, but those brahmacharis who eventually marry are situated within the loins of the universal form of the Lord. The word vane vasaha refers to vanaprastha, or the retired order of life, which is situated on the chest of the Lord. I might read text 15 as well. Varnanam ashramanam cha janma bhumyanusarinahi asan prakritayo nvinam nichayar nichottamottamaha. The various occupational and social divisions of human society appeared according to inferior and superior natures manifest in the situation of the individual's birth. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the brahmanas and sannyasis being situated on the head of the universal form of the Lord are considered to be the most qualified, whereas the sudras and grihasthas being on the legs or loins of the personality of Godhead are considered to be in the lowest position. A living entity is born with a certain amount of intelligence, beauty and social opportunity, and he is therefore situated in a particular occupational and social position within the Varnashram system. Ultimately, such positions are external designations. But since the majority of human beings are conditioned by the external energy of the Lord, they should act according to the scientific Varnashram divisions until they reach the stage of Jivan Mukta, or liberated life. Om Ajana to Nirandasya Yananjana Sadakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gada Mahiyam Tadatisva Padam Tikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Angum Langayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Dinatarinam. Now I wonder if, was text 13 read yesterday? Yeah. What about on Friday? Because it doesn't have a purport. I'm going to read text 13 because it sort of puts all of this in context. Vipra chatriya vitsudra mokabahura padaja vairajat purushajjata ya atmachara lokshanaha. In Treta Yuga, the four social orders were manifested from the universal form of the personality of Godhead. The Brahmanas appeared from the Lord's face, the Kshatriyas from the Lord's arms, the Vaishyas from the Lord's thighs, and the Sudras from the legs of that mighty form. Each social division was recognized by its particular duties and behavior. Right. I don't think it would have been, because who wrote up the verse? Who writes up the verse these days? Now, Peter's not doing it. Jai. Jai, yeah, okay. I think he's left. Because there was no purport, so he's gone to 14, because it's got a purport. So. Anyway, now, so we've got an overview here of the Varnashram system. Varna meaning the occupation and ashrama meaning the status, the stage of life that one happens to be in. Varna meaning sudra, the artisans, craftsmen, labourer class, the workers, in other words, the Vaishyas, and so they're likened to the they're the legs of the universal form. Then the Vaishyas, the commercial activities, business activities, farming, you know, the people who supply the goods. The products and services by which we all live, basically. That's the Vaishyas. And then the Kshatriyas, the arms, the administrators, really meant to be the protectors of society, those who order and structure things so that everything's running in a systematic, orderly, peaceful fashion. And then the head of society, the Brahmanas. The intellectuals, the learned, educated and educators. So this is the Varna system. briefly, succinctly described as being a manifestation of the universal form of the Lord, and then the different ashramas. The stages of life that we go through: student, householder, retired, and then renounced orders. And the locations from which they come in the universal form. Now, it's described here that in Satyuga, the residents of the Earth planet, if you like, were all very elevated souls. And pretty much everybody is under the influence of the mode of goodness. People live for a very long period of time. The Veda, or knowledge about the purpose of life, knowledge of self-realization, is manifest internally when the individuals chant Om. And just by chanting the sacred syllable Om, then the purport of the Vedas is automatically revealed to these personalities. So the Satya Yuga is an age in which mostly qualities of goodness, qualities of self-realization. In fact, it makes you wonder why people are even in the material world in the first place. They're so elevated. They must have had some curiosity, some inquisitiveness to see what is it like in the material world, and so therefore they're there. But Satya Yuga really is a unique situation. But as Prabhupada explains, material energy works in such a way, it's like a clock. You wind it up, so it runs on time. But as the clock, as the spring of the clock loosens or slackens, then it loses its ability to stay on time. So similarly, as the material energy winds down, as it passes through the different ages, Satya Yuga is present with all good qualities. But as the time factor moves forward, the qualities of the age and the qualities of the people are reduced, slacken, if you like. And so, consequently, what happens is then there's more of an influence of the lower modes of material nature. And as a result of the influence of the lower modes of material nature, then we get these, rather than everybody being a hamsa or paramahamsa, which is a description of the personality of the qualities of the persons in Satya Yuga, we start to see a manifestation of the influence, or we start to see the influence of the lower modes of nature, the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, and mixed passion and ignorance. And as a result then, people take their birth in this or these varieties of occupations and ashrams. Those who are influenced by the mode of ignorance are described as being the sudras, those in the mixed passion and ignorance, the vaishyas, predominantly those in the mode of passion, are described as the kshatriyas, and those in the mode of goodness are the brahmanas. And then there are the different classes of, or the different orders of life. The brahmacharis, and here there's a distinction between the different types of brahmacharis. There's the upakuvarna brahmachari, who maintains his brahmachari all the way through his life. Then the naishtiki brahmachari, the upakuvarna brahmachari, gets married. So it's interesting here, the grihastha is considered to be the lowest. Grihastha, the householder, is considered to be the lowest, coming from the loins of the universal form. The naishtiki brahmachari is coming from the heart. The vanaprastha coming from the chest, and the sannyasi from the head of the universal form, influenced mostly by the mode of goodness. So these positions, or these roles, are meant for engaging the conditioned soul in a set of regulations, guidelines, by which, following, they're gradually elevated. You know, the human form of life affords us opportunities. If we analyze the behavior of the human beings, and if we analyze the behavior of the animals, basically we share four things. Ahara nidra bhayam maitunam cha, described in the Mahabharata. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. If the human beings' focus is wholly and solely on eating, sleeping, mating and defending, then there's practically no difference between the human beings and the animals. We may have a more polished, as Prabhupada says, a royal edition of animals. We may be the royal edition of animals, but still, if our pursuits are simply on these things, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, then we're no better than the animals. And we see that in society these days. You know, people basically pursuing fairly base material activities with no attempt to understand their spiritual identity. No focus on spiritual activity or understanding at all. It's all just based simply on the pursuit of material facility, sense gratification, basically. Whereas the Varnashra, and so therefore the society then basically is that of animals. You know, if organization and structure, order, was a symptom of advancement, then the ants would be very advanced. Right? They have a very ordered, the bees, for example, they also have a very ordered and structured social organization. Just because we're ordered and structured in the human form of life doesn't necessarily make us more advanced. What makes the human society advanced, or better, if you like, than the animals, is that if one adheres to a system like the Varna Ashram system, the purpose of that system is not just to be ordered and structured like the ants or the bees, but rather the purpose is to have order and structure so that one can be situated in a position wherein one can lead a peaceful, productive existence, but one should add in the attempt to make spiritual progress or spiritual advancement. That's the real purpose. Varnashrama Charavata is explained in the Vishnu Purana that the purpose of the Varnashram system is not just to be structured and ordered, but structured and ordered for the purpose of pleasing Vishnu. That's the real purpose. And so therefore, the structure and order is designed to regulate the unregulated, if you like. And we see that in human society. If there's no structure, if there's no order, then human beings can degrade themselves to the, you know, to the lowest common denominator. In fact, perform activities that not even the animals do, practically speaking. They become worse than animals. The animals are regulated and ordered by the laws of material nature, very strictly. In the human form of life, we get an opportunity to pursue a greater responsibility. We're given freedoms that the animals aren't, but this is Srila Prabhupada gives the example. administrator in the government is given a certain degree of responsibility to discharge his duties in a way that's beneficial for himself, obviously, and beneficial for everybody else. So similarly, also in the human form of life, we are given an opportunity to discharge our duties voluntarily and take advantage of the facility that we've given, using it responsibly, take advantage of the fact that in the human form of life we can use it to make spiritual advancement. And in making spiritual advancement, basically, the Varnashram system encourages sacrifice. This is the system. You know, the brahmacharis, for example, one of the reasons why the brahmacharis are considered to be coming from the heart, because the heart of the Lord is actually established in sacrifice. You know, this is the mood of a devotee. He understands aham sabasya prabhava mata sarvam pravartate iti matva, what is it, iti buddha bhava samambitaha. Yes, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who understand this dedicate their lives to serving me. The devotees understand everything belongs to Krishna. Idam Krishnaya Idam Namama. This is Krishna's, it's not mine. The tendency of a materialistic person is to see something and think, that's here for my enjoyment, let me have it. This is why we get so much competition and conflict in the world today, because one person has got some facility and another person wants it. Rather than seeing that ultimately everything is, you know, from the Isopanishad, Isavasyami dam sadam yatkincha jagatam jagat tena chak tena bunjita magrita kasya svidhanam. Everything animate or inanimate within the creation is owned and controlled by Krishna. And each of us is given or allotted a certain quota for our maintenance and for our enjoyment. But we shouldn't take things knowing well to whom they belong. We shouldn't take other people's things knowing that they're given to them as their quota. And we shouldn't take more than we need, knowing that ultimately it's all controlled by Krishna. It's meant for his pleasure, not for ours. So the devotee sees everything in terms of its relationship with Krishna and then uses it for Krishna's pleasure. So this whole, and this is really the mood of sacrifice. The mood of sacrifice is, let me see everything in relationship to Krishna and use it for his benefit. I'll automatically be looked after. You know, a devotee realizes in due course that if I use everything for Krishna's service, then Krishna will look after me. I'm Krishna's servant. And Krishna protects his servant. Kuntaya pratijanehi name bhakta pranasyati. Declare it boldly, O son of Kunti, that my devotee never perishes. So the devotees have a very different perspective, and this is the purpose of the Varnashram order and structure, is to encourage everybody to follow the rules and regulations of their ashrama and their varna in such a way so that everything is done with a mood of sacrifice. The brahmacharis sacrifice the senses and the mind, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, in the fire of hearing. Right? Hearing and chanting. The duty of the brahmacharis is to act as students. So what does a student do? Hears from the teacher, recites the Vedas, svadhyaya, right? Studies the Vedas. And in that way then, they're not exposed to any material activity, they're always thinking of spiritual topics and always engaged in spiritual service. This is a form of sacrifice. The householders also perform a sacrifice. They offer the senses, right, in the fire of sacrifice. The tendency of the living entity is for unlimited sense gratification. Let me just enjoy. But the householders restrain that propensity for enjoyment by following the rules and regulations of the Grihastha Ashram. And so in that way they control that unrestrained, or shall we say that tendency for just unrestrained sense gratification by a regulated process of sense gratification, restrained action, if you like. That's a form of sacrifice. Because the vanaprastas go to the forest, and the whole purpose of going to the forest is to again restrain the senses, control the senses. The aim being to ultimately realize one's spiritual identity. Same with the sannyasis. The sannyasis have realized their spiritual identity and engage that identity in the service of Krishna. So all of these features, the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, and the sutras, and the sannyasis, the vanaprastas, the grihasthas, and the brahmacharis, these all make up the features of the social body, if you like. They all manifest from different parts of the universal form. And even though one is considered to be higher or more qualified than another, they all have their part to play. You know, you don't look on your foot as being a lesser part of your body. Okay, it's a lower part of the body, and it may not be as smart as the head, but certainly, you know, it's quite convenient to have feet on the end of your legs so that you can walk around. So even though, you know, it may be a lower part of the body, still it's valued. It has its value. It has its utility, if you like. So, you know, the grihasthas have their utility. The brahmacharis have their utility. The sannyasis have their... And they can't live without each other. Actually, they don't make any sense in isolation. They don't make any sense in isolation. They actually work together cooperatively, just as the hands and the arms and the legs and the trunk and the head all work together to make up a wholesome body. So similarly, all of these aspects or features of the social body have their role and their place in moving the whole of society forward in making spiritual advancement. And according to the modes of material nature, we may be situated differently, or at different stages of our life will be situated differently. But especially, and so therefore, you know, we encourage all of the varnas and ashrams to participate in the functioning of the social body, because they all have their roles and parts to play, and depending on what stage we happen to be, by following the rules and regulations of each of those ashrams, we facilitate our own spiritual advancement. Very important. And not that one should be looked down upon as being inferior or superior. In fact, that can get us in a lot of trouble. Although certainly by measuring the degree of renunciation we can understand one is better than another, still for those who are situated in each of the ashrams, and especially for the Grihastha ashram is considered to be the lowest here, But still, the Grihastha ashram happens to be the ashram that most of us will spend most of our time in. Right? And it's an important ashram because in that ashram one can learn how to live a peaceful, functional life, but at the same time make spiritual advancement. It's essential, actually. And we actually encourage the devotees to take up that ashram as a responsibility. You know, better to be a honest, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, better to be an honest sweeper in the street than a charlatan meditator. And so most people will have brahmachari training if they're fortunate, but then will instead of being naishtiki brahmachari all of their life, will then go on and get married. You know, I was talking to one of the brahmacharis the other day about Bhagavat Katar's wedding, and I said, I didn't see any brahmacharis at the wedding. And he, it was Nanda Mandir actually, and he said, well, should the brahmacharis have been there? So it's up to the brahmacharis, it's up to them whether they participate or not. But if, for example, the brahmacharis, you know, if it's one of your friends who's getting married, we want to encourage them. Not that, oh, now you're fallen, you've entered into the lowest, you know, the lower depths of, you know, hellish existence. Which it can be, right? Getting married and having to work and, you know, get a job and maintain a family, have children, and it's a lot of effort. Right? Great deal of sacrifice goes into being a householder. That's why being a brahmachari is considered, and a sannyasi is considered, more qualified, because it's an easier life. Easier life, so-called easier life. One has to, whilst it's said that it's easier, one has to control the mind and the senses. And for some that's difficult. Actually becomes too difficult. So therefore they recommended enter into the householder ashram. One's propensity for engaging the senses in the objects of the senses is satisfied, but it is done under strict regulation. In fact, Prabhupada says, you know, a householder living with his wife is considered a greater sannyasi than a sannyasi who lives detached. If his mind is absorbed in devotional service and he uses his mind and senses in serving Krishna, even if he's living at home with wife and family, he's considered, again, a renunciate. It's all got to do with this consciousness of the devotee rather than, you know, the colour of the cloth that he wears. And you see that in Chaitanya Leela. So, certainly the brahmacharis can attend the wedding ceremonies of their friends who they want to encourage in their spiritual life. It's a great responsibility to enter into the Grihastha ashram and live a life of restrained control, following the rules and regulations of the ashram. And that's purifying. Now, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, that whatever work a person performs, whether he's a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or sudra, whether he's a sannyasi, vanaprastha, grihastha, brahmachari, if he dedicates his life and his activities to pleasing Krishna, in other words, the results of his activities, his offers to Krishna in the prescribed way, then such a person can achieve the ultimate goal of life. It's not that only sannyasis and brahmacharis go home back to Godhead and everybody else is condemned to stay in the material world. But considering that most of us will be householders, one can be successful in any ashram so long as one is able to dedicate all of their karmana manasagira nikalas vastasu jivan mukta uchyate. It's mentioned here, jivan mukta. One has to become jivan mukta, and one becomes a jivan mukta iha yasya hare dasya by becoming a servant of Krishna and dedicating kamana, one's activities, manasa, one's thoughts, gira, one's speech, in devotional service. So that's the real purpose of the Varnashram system, is that one can dovetail whatever ashram, whatever occupation one has, to the service of Krishna, and thereby perfect one's existence. The renounced householder, the renounced brahmachari, the renounced sannyasi, the renounced vanaprastha, knows ultimately that everything's coming from Krishna. It is not mine. It belongs to the Lord, and so therefore let me engage my activities according to my vana and ashram for the pleasure of Krishna. That's real detachment. Even for a householder, one can be detached. A good example is Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy was the governor of Madras. He was a householder, and he was also considered to be a sudra. So not a highly elevated position. Yet Ramananda Roy was one of the intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whenever Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya would meet, they would absorb themselves in discussing topics of Krishna, very intimate topics. Lord Chaitanya, it's interesting actually, Lord Chaitanya didn't instruct the general public on very intimate subject matter, Radha Krishna, you know, pastimes, the Rasa, Leela. Lord Chaitanya didn't discuss these things in public, but with very elevated and exalted personalities, these were the topics that they absorbed themselves in. So we can understand, Ramananda Roy, even though he was a householder, he was a pounds, shillings and pence man, in the sense that he was the governor of the state around Madras, that didn't concern Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because his mood, his Krishna consciousness was so deep and absorbed in devotional service that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relished the association of Ramananda Roy, because he was such an elevated, exalted devotee, despite the fact that he was just a so-called householder and the governor of that state. So regardless of what ashram or vana one happens to be in, if one cultivates this mood of dedicating everything that one does for Krishna's pleasure, then that's actual renunciation. That's the whole message of the Bhagavad Gita. Real renunciation is not what colour cloth you happen to be wearing, but rather the mentality in which one performs one's duties. Idam Krishnaya idam mam namama. This is for Krishna, it is not for me. That's the mood of a devotee. And that's the purpose of the Varnashram, Varna and Ashram system. Not that one has to become a sannyasi to cultivate that mentality. Not that one has to remain a brahmachari to cultivate that mentality. That mentality or mood is meant to be cultivated throughout all of the Varnas and Ashrams. That's why Prabhupada would encourage the householders, give 50%. of your earnings to preach Krishna consciousness, for example. You know, if you're giving 50% of your earnings to Krishna, then you're usually, you know, depending on Krishna fairly substantially. Right? You've given away 50% of your earnings, you don't have a lot left over. So you'll be always praying to Krishna, please help me. I am yours. But if we give everything to Krishna, the interesting thing is then that Krishna is possessed by such a devotee. One who gives up everything, understanding that this all belongs to Krishna, then the benefit of doing that is not that we're losing, because this is the mentality of the materialists. They think, oh, if I give everything to Krishna, then I'm a loser. Who'll look after me? But a devotee discovers, if I give everything to Krishna, Krishna gives himself to me and Krishna looks after me. So the devotee ends up then in a pact of love with Krishna, because he understands, if I understand, this is Krishna consciousness means that we should understand everything belongs to Krishna, including myself. And if I dedicate all of my activities, if I give all of my possessions to Krishna, the benefit for me is that Krishna reveals himself to such a devotee. That can be achieved in any of the varnas and any of the ashrams. And as Krishna says, those who act in such a progressive fashion, dedicating their lives to me, then they are in me and I am in them. So this is the purpose of the Varnashram system, not that we have to strive to be the best. The best is one who sticks to his position. And this is very much the message of the Bhagavad Gita, because Arjuna was sort of saying, oh, I'm a Kshatriya, I have to kill, and so therefore my position is faulty. But Krishna says, no, even if there are faults in your ashram, even if there are faults in your varna, your occupation, you should still do that activity with the proper mentality, for by performing one's duties in that fashion, one will become purified, one will realize me, and one will be successful regardless of the position that they happen to be in. The structure and the order is designed in order to maintain and support the practice of devotional service. And it's for that purpose then that the Varnashram system was introduced, in order to stabilize people's existence so they could make spiritual advancement. Does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes. In this day and age, is it true? Yes, the Shastra does recommend it or discourage it. Vanaprastha. What about it? Recommended? The kind of Vanaprastha that we're going to read about, I don't think so. You know, living in the forest, don't cut your fingernails, don't cut your hair. But just eat fruits and berries that, you know, leaves, fruits and berries that you find in a jungle. If you were to go and take Vanaprastha, say in, where do you live? Wantuna South. Or, you know, go into the Dandenongs. You'd be a very hungry fellow. Just wear bark and the leaves of trees for clothes. That's a description of the Vanaprastha. You know, Kali Yuga is such a disturbed, it's just such an odd atmosphere that really, you know, the rules and regulations of these ashrams, we follow the very basics. The main principle for us is to engage in devotional service. That's the main principle. So, uh, um, after your children have grown up, which is getting pretty soon, right? Then the necessity for work is not so critical. So one can use that time for preaching, right? Travelling from place to place. You know, the idea of a vanaprastha is to be renounced. He may not be fully renounced. Sannyasi may still travel with his wife and preach, gradually cultivating, you know, a sense of renunciation. Travel to Vrindavan, go to Mayapur, visit Jagannath Puri, visit the holy places for spiritual, you know, what's the word, spiritual advancement, for being enthused and encouraged in one's spiritual life, but one can use that period of one's life for preaching, just as a grihastha can as well, for that matter. So practical application of these principles. And you know, the basic principle is, you know, do devotional service. And for us in ISKCON, doing devotional service, a great deal of that is to support the preaching. Cook the Sunday feast. Huh? That's, for a lot of the householders, that's as much renunciation as they can manage in a month. Oh no, I've got to cook the Sunday feast. Oh boy. Right? So there's austerity for you. You get benefit. All the people who take prasadam get benefit. Easy. Get up early in the morning, come to the temple, dress Prabhupada. That's renunciation. Otherwise, you know, we could be at home in bed sleeping. Right? But we sacrifice our tendency to sleep by getting up early, go to the temple, chant Hare Krishna, and do some service. Renunciation in this day and age is fairly simple. It's not too complicated, you know. Going off into the jungle. It's just not practical. In this day and age, it's not very practical. But there are austerities and penances that can be performed in devotional service, especially those that support the preaching, which can be just as challenging for us. Means we have to put aside the time, we have to control the mind and the senses, to do activities which are regulated, restrained, or in a positive way, devotional service, which then support the preaching. That's how we make our progress. That's our renunciation, if you like.
A question regarding the brahmacharis. You mentioned that there are two types of brahmacharis. One who stays brahmachari for life.
Upakurvana and Naishtiki. Naishtiki brahmachari is one who's a brahmachari for life. Upakurvana is one who gets married.
In the purport, it's mentioned that the one who gets married is also situated within the loins of the universe.
Yes, yeah.
And the other one is in the heart.
From the heart, yeah.
How is this going on? For example, if you take brahmacharis, what is correct for me, are you then straight away going to the heart, and then when you get married, you will fall down? Or it is within your desire, if you take in brahmacharis life, just until you get 25 and prepare yourself to get married. And where are you situated?
I don't think you need to worry about it too much, to be quite honest. You know, the Naishtiki Brahmachari, see, basically we're influenced by the material energy, so we think we're part of the material energy and that we can enjoy the material energy, right? The material energy is actually a perverted reflection of the internal or spiritual energy. When we see it in its perverted way, we think it's here for our enjoyment. And for those who have a pure heart and a pure vision of things, they see everything in relationship to Krishna's internal energy, and that it all should be used for Krishna's pleasure. So that's Krishna's, that the internal potency of the Lord is situated within Krishna's heart, if you like, right? But when we see things, and many of us are forced to see things in this way by dint of our karmas and the influence of the most material nature. You know, like a devotee, he has a desire to serve Krishna, he'd like to see everything in that way, but due to the influence of his past karmas, the modes of material nature, he still has that propensity for material enjoyment, right? So therefore he still wants to serve Krishna, but by the force of his karma, he's outside of that meditation or outside of that inclination. He's then still given a chance for purification. Take a wife, or a wife take a husband, live together peacefully, chant Hare Krishna, and perform those activities in a regulated fashion, not in an animalistic fashion, but in a regulated fashion, that's still ultimately aimed at serving and pleasing Krishna. Right? So, and you know, one gets the benefit of performing that sacrifice according to the Vaishnav system, you know, the bhakti process, the process of bhakti, it actually doesn't matter. What is that? There's a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Grihe Thako, Vane Thako, Sada Bolo, Hari Thako, which says basically, whether you're a Grihe Thako, whether you live in a house, or Vane Thako, whether you're a Vanaprastha living in the forest, Sada Bolo, Hari Thako, always chant Hare Krishna, and you'll be perfect. Right? So it doesn't matter whether you're living at home or living in the forest, if you chant Hare Krishna, you can be perfect. So, you know, whether he's come from the loins or whether he's come from the heart, actually it doesn't matter. That's why the social body is there, is so that everybody can be engaged in a positive way and will make advancement. You know, when we start thinking, oh, you're not as good as me, right, then you get Kanishta kind of mentality, pride, basically. And you know, there's danger for the brahmacharis, danger for the sannyasis, danger for the grihasthas, when they start thinking, we're the best. Right? Actually, we're all meant to be servants. Jivaras, and you know, when Prabhupada was asked, Prabhupada would explain the Vanashram system to people, and Prabhupada was asked one time by a news reporter, he said, well, what class are you in? And Prabhupada said, fifth class. Fifth class. I am the servant of all of the others. Right? So that's really the mood. You know, we saw it in ISKCON in 76, basically. You know, there was this competition between the Radha Damodar Travelling Sankirtan Party and the temples. The Travelling Sankirtan Party was headed up by the sannyasis, famously Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And the temple presidents were mostly householders. So inadvertently what happened was, whether it was deliberate or not, was that the Travelling Sankirtan Party would come to the temples, and then the sannyasis and the brahmacharis would preach to the local brahmacharis, you don't want to stay here with these lowly householders, right, who are just, you know, addicted to sense gratification. You should come and travel with the sannyasis. Right? So the sannyasis were pinching all of the brahmacharis out of the temples. And it became a hot topic in Mayapur at the annual festival. And Prabhupada had to, you know, adjudicate the whole thing. And that's where, you know, that's where Tamal Krishna Maharaj was told to go and preach in China. Because there was a conflict. And Prabhupada could see that this conflict would actually split the society. Where the sannyasis weren't necessarily saying so, but they were certainly encouraging this mood of the you know, we're better than you guys. And it was destroying the whole, you know, it was destroying the atmosphere in the temples. So the mood of a Vaishnava is not so much, you know, I'm a this or I'm a that and I'm better than you kind of mentality, but rather, you know, I'm your servant. Prabhu. You know, Prabhu means you're my master and I'm your servant. As Prabhupada says, you know, it shouldn't just be lip service. You know. So Prabhupada gave the example, you know, as the spiritual master, he is the servant of all of the varnas and all of the ashrams. Householders should also be the servant of all of the varnas and ashrams, giving charity, you know, feed the brahmacharis and the sannyasis and look after them. But by the same token, the brahmachari should also be the servant of all of the other ashrams. The sannyasi is generally meant to be the spiritual master, or he's the emblem of renunciation, in that everything he does or she does is dedicated to serving Krishna. That's what sannyas means. Not for me, all for Krishna. That's the renunciation. Not just renunciation for renunciation's sake. You know, Prabhupada would talk about the sannyasi, the Mayavadi sannyasi, who would brag, you know, if anybody gives me money, then my hand just immediately drops it. Prabhupada said, no, you can take a picture of me, just give me all the money. But not because he wants the money for himself, because he'll use that money for serving Krishna. So, you know, as I said before, you know, the foot may be the lowest part of the body, but we still don't denigrate our feet. Your foot. Right? We look after our foot as well as we look after our head. Right? You cut your fingernail, you know, your toenails, give your foot a scrub. Right? You look after your feet as well as you look after your head, because it may be the lower part, but it's still valuable. Anything else? Kandrasimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.